Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
We don't know the specifics of what exactly happened between Justin Trudeau and a female reporter 18 years ago at a music festival in Kokanee. She used the term groping. He says people perceive situations differently.
The same interactions could be experienced very differently from one person to the next.
All we know for sure is that the incident is not going away. And even when it does, it'll be back just in time for the 2019 vote. So how did our self-professed feminist prime minister get his response to this so badly wrong? What should he have done? And who are the real hypocrites here? It's July 10th, 2018. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Anne Kingston is a senior writer and columnist at Maclean's who's written extensively both on the Me Too movement and on Justin Trudeau. She's been on this story since just after the initial report.
Okay, so this event dates to August 2000. That's the original event. And what we're talking about is something called the Kokanee Summit, which was a music festival held in a small BC town. Justin Trudeau was in attendance. He was then a 28-year-old high school teacher. He was there because on behalf of the family charity set up for his brother in terms of avalanche awareness. So what happened then in August was an editorial appeared in the Creston Valley Advance. And that editorial was very critical of Trudeau. It claimed that he was involved in groping and mishandling, those were terms used, a young reporter, and that he had a day late issued an apology for this behavior by saying, "If I had known you were working for a national paper, I would not have been so forward." That's a paraphrase, but that's essentially what he said. And what he was referring to is that the young reporter with this paper was also a stringer for the National Post. And I guess he found out that she was also working for a National Post. So basically, that was that. The unsigned editorial published in this paper went into the archives. And then earlier this year, Frank Magazine recycled this particular anecdote in light of the Me Too, and particularly Justin Trudeau's zero tolerance stance in terms of sexual impropriety within the Liberal Party and his own statements that he has never personally invaded anyone's space or their headspace. That he said in a January interview. So, okay, Frank Magazine publishes this, and then it's picked up just before the G7 summit by a bunch of outlets, and it snowballs from there. And, you know, we start examining, is it their hypocrisy, a double standard at work? It became a way of inquiring about the prime minister's character. There was a lot of partisan blowback. It just became this tempest in a teapot that exploded. And the prime minister's office issued a very scripted, short response saying that the prime minister remembered no negative interactions. It was carefully worded on that day. And that wasn't good enough. It became a social media phenomenon. And then we saw last week, beginning on July 1st, the prime minister starting to publicly come out with contradictory statements. First, he said,
"I had a good day that day. I don't remember any negative interactions that day at all."
Then a little bit later, he said,
"I do not feel that I acted inappropriately in any way, but I respect the fact that someone else might have experienced that differently. And this is part of the reflections that we have to go through."
The final sort of point in this, you know, long, torturous saga happened on Friday when the woman herself, who had turned down all media requests for interviews, had been quiet, had been, you know, subject to all sorts of scrutiny online, came out with a statement, her name attached to it, saying that the events as depicted back in the day, she stands by, but she didn't pursue the incident then. Trudeau apologized in the day, and she's not going to pursue it now.
How much of one's opinion of this story depends on where you sit on the political spectrum. It kind of seems like it's one that's being interpreted in many different ways.
Oh, certainly. It's become an absolute partisan flashpoint, you know, and you've seen this on social media. It's gotten very, very ugly. I think it's possible, though, to sort of step back and just look at the circumstances and focus on the Prime Minister's behavior and inconsistencies without it necessarily being a partisan issue. It could be simply something focused on this moment in time, on the complications of Me Too, on people looking back. What are historic allegations? What role should they play? And also a feminist prime minister dealing with a very tricky subject. And how do you skate that? And has he done a good job? And I think consensus among a lot of people, and I count myself among them, is that he hasn't done a good job, that this has been a squandered opportunity.
Many of you know I am a feminist and proud to call myself one.
How would he have done a good job on something like this?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, first of all, it requires candor. And the problem is that we've got a zero tolerance policy about sexual misbehavior. And this is problematic in the sense that I think that there should be zero tolerance, but it also shows there are shades of gray in this conversation that maybe we should be talking about. For instance, I think the Prime Minister should have come out far more quickly. He shouldn't have had a PMO statement. He should have spoken directly to it. This is an issue he says he has cared about deeply for decades. He was involved with sexual assault awareness at McGill himself, has led conversations. So where was he in leading this conversation when it first came up? If they had been smart, he would have been out on the front lines talking about it. And he also probably should have shown a bit of remorse. One thing that's been absent from anything Trudeau has said is, I'm sorry. He has basically said, there are two versions of events here. I respect her version of events, but I don't remember acting improperly. And there doesn't seem to be any retrospective retrofitting of how, in fact, she was distressed by this. And that doesn't seem to inform the way the PM sees the incident now, which is very interesting to me.
So leaving aside the sort of partisan criticism that he's going to get from the other side after a zero tolerance policy and this incident emerging, what has he done wrong?
This is an excellent question. I mean, it comes down to the perception of the woman who, back in the day, and she stated her case back in the day in terms of she felt that, improper touching. There are two things that are happening here. One, improper touching without consent, that's wrong. Secondly, she was in the workplace and right. Adding another dimension to this. And I think that we often just wave that away, but we see it all around us. Even now, examples of women having to deal with things that seem like minor infractions, they should be taken more seriously. So, in terms of what he actually did wrong, we don't know the details. And the fact that she has said, I am not pursuing this, sort of makes that end of the conversation over.
A lot of the media conversation has been focused one way or the other. Did he do anything wrong? Will he get past this? What does this mean for the Liberals? Have we seen any of that conversation bubble up about how we look at these minute encounters?
Absolutely. I think what we've seen, and I see it as a really unfortunate fault line where the media has been sort of seen as a singular pernicious element in this story, which is slightly unfair, I think, because media, their job is to go out and, ask, but not harass, obviously, but ask initially. But certainly counselors, women, particularly in the area of sexual assault awareness, training, that sort of thing, sees this, all of the focus, and it has been a deluge of focus for sure, perhaps disproportionate, given that there's a big world out there, has put the movement back, has made women, hesitant to come forward. It has shown how, I'm not sure whether the analogy is there, because in this case, the woman chose not to come forward. So, but there is this concern that the consent of the woman involved was not respected, that it ultimately comes down to if a woman comes forward, she is to be believed. In this case, it's tricky because she came forward, she stated her piece back in 2000, and now she chooses not to. So we have to respect that.
Why did she have to make that statement then on Friday?
She said she did it reluctantly. She didn't want to come forward. I sense, and this is my own interpretation, is that she feared that she was going to be doxxed. It was, you know, her name had was not, people knew, journalists knew her name, but nobody was spreading it. But there was concern that, yeah, she was going to be doxxed, the information about her family, her employment, just awful stuff would come out. And she also wanted, I guess, this national conversation was buzzing on without her voice as part of it. And I can understand, particularly as a former journalist, that she would want to just be clear about where she stood in it all without it necessarily becoming an ongoing conversation she wanted to be part of.
Is the onus in that case on people in the media to simply continue to allow her to keep her privacy? Or is there a case to be made that when allegations like this reach the level that they've reached to their national media story, she should say something?
Well, I think that that's up to the individual. I don't think that there should be any onus one way or the other. I think it's important to notice, though, that in her statement, she said that she doesn't want to be part of this conversation. She wasn't saying, I want this conversation to end, or that there isn't an obligation on the part of the media to hold, you know, people in power to account. That is one of the functions of the media. Now, whether this has gone off the deep end in terms of, you know, there are other issues we could be focusing
has
on.
Has it
in
gone
terms
off the deep end?
Part of me thinks that, I mean, I was looking on social media on the weekend, and the toxicity, that is not the grand sum of how, where this exists, by
thank
the way.
God.
But I think that we kind of all need to take a deep breath on this one and maybe just reflect for a while.
What's next for this story? It kind of feels like we've explored, to your point, all the facts that are there. How long does this last and where does it go?
Well, I think that, I mean, it seems to have sputtered out in a sense. I think that the statement, I think, made by the woman, the original who back in 2000, that's kind of put a seal on it in a way in my head. Well, that's not to say that we haven't seen over the weekend and even today reflective, very kind of thoughtful reflections on Trudeau. And, you know, because I think a lot of people take great solace in the fact that we have a feminist prime minister who cares about these issues. And I think there's a certain amount of cognitive dissonance involved in imagining that he himself is somehow vulnerable in this area. We like to see him as bulletproof. The conversation right about this time is probably, as we discuss it, is winding down, at least this round of it, unless something else comes forward.
Can Justin Trudeau be both the champion of feminism and equality and also the 28-year-old who inappropriately groped a woman at the Kokanee summit?
Yes, I think absolutely. This is what life is. Life is about development, about learning, about recognizing past behavior was incorrect and you know, benefiting from hindsight and all of those things. What we're seeing in this story, though, is absolutely no sense of contrition, no sense of apology, no sense of learning. You know, the prime minister is telling the country to reflect, and we all need to be doing this. There's no sense of self-reflection on his part. There's no sense that, yes, this is what, you know, in an ideal world, he would have been able to say, yeah, I was at a party. It was a beery music festival. I had a few drinks. I was 28 years old. I was a bit of an idiot. I did this, you know, and I don't even remember the details, but if I offended or distressed anyone, I'm deeply apologetic. That, to my mind, is far more reasonable and even reassuring message to hear.
So you tried to ask Trudeau some questions. You wrote a piece in Maclean's about the 12 questions you have from, and that was a few days ago. Given his raft of interviews over the weekend, what's one of those questions that you're still looking for an answer on?
Well, I'm stuck on this idea of there are two sides to every story, particularly given the fact that Trudeau has been very outspoken about believing women who come forward. So I think what I would want to know is, you know, does he still believe that? Because here is a test case of a woman having come forward back in the day. You know, why then is he giving equal weight to both the statement that he made and she made? Why in the universe in which he has, you know, sort of stated his claim, his feminism, why is he not giving more weight to what she said?
Are we talking about this leading up to election 2019?
Oh, you betcha. I mean, it's going to be recycled, I think. Probably, you know, perhaps packaged with a bunch of other things. But certainly elections are about recycling past grievances, past, I don't know if this is a scandal. It's a kind of a quasi-scandal, Canadian scandal. And I imagine that we're going to hear it in terms of the Prime Minister's going back to the question of the branding that so defines him.
Thanks, Anne.
My pleasure.
That was The Big Story. You can find us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can reach us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Don't forget to subscribe, tell your friends. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and we will talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.